Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast, episode number 18. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you today?
Dude, I'm doing great, man. We're recording this on a Saturday. It's actually the DC and DC convention is going on right now, and so DC was actually kind enough to be streaming the panels on YouTube. So I was able to catch the Wonder Woman panel this morning, and great. And Cameron Vicondova, of course, Selena Kyle on Gotham, she was on the panel, and so that was the highlight for me because I love Cameron Vicondova, and I'm a huge Catwoman fan, and I love her performance on Gotham. So it was great to hear her talk on the panel and to hear everybody else on the panel as well. So that's what I was doing today, and now I'm excited to talk some DC with you and a special guest we got coming up later. So yeah, I'm doing great, man. How about you?
I'm doing really good. I'm waiting to hear some. Hopefully we'll get some kind of news that we can update on next episode regarding what comes out of the this panel here. So we'll find out. And if there is any news, we'll report on it. Before we can do news that we haven't heard of yet, we have to talk about some new things that popped up in the interim while we were away. And yep. we do have two new trailers. Is that correct?
We do indeed. We've got two trailers to talk about today.
All right, what's the first one up?
All right, well, let's talk about Krypton first, because that's the one that dropped first, and that's also the one that premieres first, out of these two things. So, we got our first full-length trailer for Krypton.
Also. Right, right. And I'm very excited about Krypton in general because of, I love the Superman mythology, so anytime we can expand and play in that world some more, I'm a happy camper. And I was already excited about this show. I was gonna watch it regardless of what happened in this trailer, especially now that I know it has a release date of March 21st, 2018. And I'm gonna keep hammering that as often as I can get because we waited so long for it. But in terms of this trailer, I gotta say I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's the production values, first of all, look top notch. They're spending some money on this thing. I don't know how much money they're spending on it, but they're spending some money on it.
Let's just hope it's not too much to where like they're expecting like exorbitant ratings
they are on Sci-Fi, so the ratings should be kept in check because that network only gets only has such a the bar is only so high, right?
Right, right.
It's similar to the CW. I mean, the CW doesn't go out there expecting who knows what, because if they did, 3/4 of their shows would be canceled. There's that.
But, I'm just saying I hope that the amount of viewers they get, is enough to justify the money they put into it.
Right, because they said David Goyer at the. They had I think it's the TCA or whatever it is. Conference or whatever it is, and Goyer was there, because David Goyer is one of the creatives behind the show, and he was saying that they have a 7 or 8 year plan for Krypton. So
yeah.
So there's plenty of stories planned. What we got in this trailer, I love how it starts with Jor-El. Segel kneeling in what looks to be some, I don't know what room, what where that is or what room that is, but it's not like a crystal chamber, but it has that look, so it's paying homage to that without being a chandelier.
It's got the House of El symbol on
right,
the ground.
Yeah. But I like that it pays homage to the fortress that we're used to without being an actual chandelier or looking like a chandelier, which was my problem with the fortress in most Superman incarnations, because it's based off of the Superman 78 fortress, and to me that's it looks like to me it would be like, imagine if Killer Frost, was a chandelier maker. That would be the result. So I liked that it was a nod, but without going full blown 78. And then he's talking about, you know, how his family, the story of his family is one of, prosperity, but also shame. I don't think he used shame, but to that extent, right? And then so you see, I'm assuming you see Segel's grandfather, the old guy in the red cape with the black eyes. I think that's.
I think we have a name for him, but I can't remember what it
right,
is. Or
but I think it's his. It's Segel's grandfather, right?
Okay, so I don't know.
Superman's great grandfather at that point. You see some of the Zod family and their, the military branch, and they're shooting and they're causing, the typical ruckus that you'd expect from Zod or his lineage, and then we get our first look at Adam Strange, and he's in basically a jean jacket, a t-shirt, and
played by Smallville alum
and a baseball. Wait, before you ham fist the Smallville reference in, let me finish. He's wearing a baseball cap, and okay, now go ahead.
Smallville alum Sean Seipel. That's all I was trying to say.
Right. Well, you gotta ham fist those Smallville references in, so.
But I will say what I like about him is it sort of gives us as the audience sort of a gateway into the world, because it's sort of he's sort of coming at us. I mean, he's from Earth, he's from present day, so he's coming at this. Everything he sees in the show, he'll be experiencing it like we are. So I think that's what we get somebody from our world. He's wearing a baseball cap, like all that, to into this world, to sort of be our eyes.
And that's a great point. His being on the show, to me, raises so many questions. How did he get there? What were the circumstances that led to that?
He got dropped off on the Wave Rider.
who knows? You never know.
Question for you, though. Do you think we'll see him in his traditional suit with the jetpack?
Well, here's the thing. I'm glad you segued into that, because, there's been some, what's the word I'm trying to use? Complaining. That's a good one. Online about why is Adam Strange not in his typical costume? And I'm like, well, relax. Everybody relax. It's the first shot of him. Just because we didn't see him in the jetpack or the whole armor / outfit, whatever you want to call it, doesn't mean we're not going to see it at all.
Yeah, superheroes wear street clothes all the time. I'm just thinking, like, that's not, I'm not complaining about it.
I know you're not, but there is complaining in the Twitter sphere, like always. And so I just want to preface by saying, relax. It's the first time we've seen him. There's time for that. And it's like, again, it's a first look. Just chill. He's there, and basically the cool thing is, he basically explains some more of the plot, where he says there are people from my timeline who have come back to the past to destroy Krypton, because where I come from, your grandson is the greatest hero in the universe. And he hands Segel Superman's cape. And at that moment, I'm like, oh man, look, all I had to see was the cape. I'm easy. Just show me the cape or show me a piece of the costume, and you have me even further in. So to quote Justice League once again, I'm all in, because you got to make some use of that marketing. I loved it. The time travel aspect of it adds so much uniqueness to the show.
Me too. Once we found out that was going to be an aspect of it, that got me a lot more excited, especially because of all the characters from present day, now that we know are going to be incorporated into the show. That's a big selling point for me, at least.
Right. And we're getting, and the cool thing is, we know we're getting, it's been confirmed we're getting Brainiac.
Yep.
They've said Doomsday.
Yep. Hawk, right?
They said Hawk Girl. Yeah. And they said this opens the door to potentially seeing, some iteration of the Green Lanterns appearing on the show later on down the line. So,
would be awesome.
I'm very intrigued. Again, I love the Krypton aspect of Superman's mythology, and it's often very minimally represented. You know, 10 to 20 minutes tops in the movies. So it'll be good to get that fleshed out and more of their history, their culture, their political you know leanings, all that, their religious sort of beliefs and all that. All that can be fleshed out here, and I'm you know really excited and really fascinated, and the fact that the production values seem so high only raises my expectations. So I you know, to me, if I could use some sort of time travel device to get to March 21st a little bit earlier, I would, but I can't, so we'll have to wait. But
hey, there's for me, there's too much awesome stuff in between now and then that I don't want to jump.
Oh, there is, but I'm just saying, I really want to. I'm just trying to underscore how much I really want to. I really can't wait for the show.
Yeah. I got you. Did you happen to spot? I think it was the DC Daily Drop guys. I think it was Tom from DC Daily Drop who pointed this out. That he spotted a Bottle City in the trailer, and I couldn't catch it on any of the times I watched the trailer.
I didn't catch it, but it certainly makes sense, you know, Kandor and all that, right? So
yeah.
So yeah, I can't wait to watch it all unfold, and of course we'll be talking about the pilot after it airs, for sure.
And I don't know if it's part of the score or not from the actual show, but I love the music in the trailer. It was like really I don't know, like intense music, and I dug the score.
Yeah, it was very good. So we'll see if
you never know with trailers whether it's actually part of the score or not. But
exactly, you just never know. But let's hope that some of that bears fruit and it's actually part of the show. So we'll see.
Yeah.
What was the other trailer that we had to talk about?
Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Right. Okay, look, I'll come right on and say it. I am not, to start with, I am not a big fan of Teen Titans Go. I've tried to watch it, you know, because of my nephews, and if they're here and it's on, I can have it on, but I am largely ignoring the TV when it's on. The animation style, I don't like it. I think the comedy is just I find it to be too childish, and that makes sense because it's for children. But so the concept of it as a cartoon already is not for me, and when you transition that into the trailer, I'll say what I liked about the trailer. I did like the fact that they all came out at the beginning and were dressed as Wonder Woman, and their reasoning was that's what everybody wants, right? So they're playing off the success of Wonder Woman, and they're making a nod to the success of Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And I was with them there. I'm like, all right, I agree with you. Now get off my screen and put her back on. That's what I said when I was watching the trailer. And then it transitioned to, well, if Aquaman can get a movie, why can't we? And it's, I have a problem with that because DC is in a place where they're trying to position Aquaman not to be the butt of the jokes, right?
Yeah.
And here you have one of your own products that's going to be in theaters before an Aquaman movie, poking fun and acknowledging that Aquaman is the butt of everybody's jokes. I think it's counterintuitive.
Well, I see where you're coming from, but I didn't take offense to it because for me it's like, I think they're just acknowledging the fact that characters we never thought we'd see get movies are now getting them. So I just think it's acknowledging the state of superhero cinema and how awesome it is. Like, I don't think it was necessarily saying I didn't take it as like an Aquaman fish joke.
No, it wasn't a fish joke. I just think they're playing off the fact that, you know, the general perception of, oh my God, Aquaman would never get a movie because he's a joke. And you're trying to, DC Films is trying to change that perspective by having him in Justice League and hiring somebody like Jason Momoa. And then you have this show that's reverted. And the animation, obviously, the one shot with the seahorse. The animation looked even cheesier than usual.
And, believe me, Adam. Jason Momoa as Aquaman is too good to let this joke do anything negative. To have any.
No,
negative.
I hope not. But I'm just saying it's reinforcing a stereotype that needs to go away. And to me, that Warner Brothers is trying to expunge from the character. So for me personally, I get where you're coming from, but for me personally, that was counterintuitive. excuse me. The other thing that I really didn't care for in this trailer was the extended fart joke. Now, look, I enjoyed the whole fart joke in the Harley Quinn and the Batman and Harley Quinn animated movie. I said as much in our review. The reason why that works there for me is because that is supposed to be a raunchy comedy, correct?
Yeah.
This is marketed for children. And we are, we're languishing on a fart joke in a 2 minute trailer, and it's like, I had the same problem with. This doesn't extend. This has nothing to do with the fact that I don't like Teen Titans Go. This extends to Guardians of the Galaxy 2, when, Drax was making a penis joke, while Kurt Russell's character was trying to explain. You know, the tenets of his character.
Dude, and, that was hilarious.
But it was like, okay, but once I get it, but he kept bringing it up for like, it was like 2.5 minutes of, but what about your penis? But what about your penis? So it was the same thing with the fart, and I think it's ridiculous. Like if it's in Guardians, I guess you can get away with it again because you're appealing to a older audience as well, right? But with this, just because of the age group of the audience they're going for, it's like, all right, we get it with the fart joke. Like, to me, unless it's a raunchy comedy, it's the lowest common denominator of humor you can speak to. But
I don't know. I'm not gonna lie. I kind of chuckled at it. But I think what they were doing with the because like they really did emphasize like that is the one. I think that's the only scene in this trailer that's actually going to be in the movie.
So you're on board. You're on board with this movie.
Well, here, what all I'm going to say about the fart joke is that Teen Titans Go gets a lot of, like, one heavy criticism that it gets, like, online from fans is that, oh, it's just fart jokes. And so I feel like it was sort of meta of them. I think they did it on purpose to say, okay, that's what you think of us. We're going to make the whole trailer for our movie one long fart joke. So, like, you see what I'm saying? Like, I think that they kind of did that on purpose.
Fair enough, but I still don't like it.
Okay, all right, that's fair. I mean, for me, it worked. Like, I chuckled. But also, if you notice, during that scene, as Teen Titans Go, and this is one of the things that I think Teen Titans Go does best, you look around, all the Easter eggs on every single building written everywhere. I mean, did you take a look at some of those?
The Easter eggs are cool, but, if I'm going to sit through one of these, the animation and the story have to appeal me on some level, like, especially when it's geared to purely more for kids, like I have to get some enjoyment out of it, and just based off the trailer and what I know of the show as it exists, it's not my cup of tea.
Okay, I mean that's fair. I mean I'll be honest, Teen Titans Go is not my favorite thing in the world either. I mean I watch it. I've seen every episode and I enjoy it, but it's not one of my favorite shows. I certainly enjoyed the original Teen Titans animated series a ton more, but you know, I dig the show, okay, and this trailer for me, I mean, it was about what I expected it to be honest. I found it funny. I chuckled at it, but one thing I wanted to say is, I don't know if you saw, but we also got reveals of who Will Arnett and Kristen Bell are playing in the movie.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah.
So, okay, all right, so I feel like we should talk a little bit about that, because I have a very interesting theory about that. We've got Kristen Bell playing Jade Wilson, and of course we've already seen Rose Wilson, Ravager, on Teen Titans Go, so I don't know what they're doing here, whether Jade Wilson is going to be Ravager in disguise or something like that. There could be a twist about that, but my big theory, of course, we've got Will Arnett playing Slade. Now, I don't know how I feel about that completely, because this is the first time in Teen Titans Go we're getting Slade in anything more than a cameo, and I was really hoping that when we did eventually get him, if we ever did, in a speaking role, that we'd have Ron Perlman reprising his role from the original Teen Titans animated series. That's not happening, but here's my theory. Of course, we've also seen Batman get cameos all the time in Teen Titans Go. They've also never been speaking roles. My guess is that they're going to finally give him a speaking role for the first time ever, which people have been waiting for a long time. The best place to do that is in a theatrically released movie. My guess is that Will Arnett is going to reprise his role as Batman at some point in this movie. And so we're going to get Will Arnett Batman. And to make matters even better, if it comes right after that long fart joke and he says smells like discipline, like he said in the Batman and Harley Quinn film, that would be the best entrance I could possibly imagine.
Well, I think you're right about Will Arnett playing Batman. I think to me that would be the only... That's what makes sense, the most sense. So I think you're right there.
It would be a cool surprise, right?
But yeah, definitely. But look, at the end of the day, as much as I don't like it, I don't like Teen Titans Go, I don't like this trailer, I'm glad that it exists for the kids. I will say that. And I hope they have they enjoy the hell out of it, because anything that can create, DC fans of the future, I'm happy exists, even if it's not my flavor.
Amen.
And that's what I'll say on that. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have our guest. Welcome back, everyone, and we have our guest with us. Jordan, I've been waiting to have this person on for a while. I've even mistakenly called you by his name, so let's introduce him. Welcome, everybody. Justin Kowalski from Batman on Film. How are you, Justin?
I'm doing great, man. Having a good morning.
It's good to have you here. So let's get right into it. We want to talk a variety of different things of DC entertainment-wise. And I want to start with always the hot-button issue of DC films.
Wait, you mean DC films is a hot-button issue?
Oh, yeah. No. It's all fine, and everybody gets along, and there's no arguing. There's nothing of the sort, and it's all rosy. But we have some news regarding DC films recently, with Walter Hamada coming on to run things and hopefully set things in a more stable place. What are your thoughts on his hiring?
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere for me, but I definitely I think I understand why. It sounds like I'm looking kind of, maybe I'm digging, but he came from New Line and kind of did a lot of, horror stuff. He's got relationship with James Wan. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're trying to trim their budgets, and horror movies, they don't have the biggest budgets, but you kind of get the most bang for your buck, and they all turn profits. And Warner Brothers is a business, and they want to make money. And at the same time, they want to do right by their characters. And maybe this guy can help, guide budgets and, hopefully still get a good story out of, what you're able to do. Sometimes a budget restriction can force you to be, more creative.
Right.
As long as you're not trying to go bigger than your wallet lets you, maybe you got to scale things down. I don't really know too much about anything except that I just want them to have their people in the right places and just make good movies. Whatever sets them up to make good movies, that's what is going to get me on their side. Because right now I just feel like it's a mess and they don't really have a plan. Even if they say they do, they need to get a plan and then find the mouthpiece and let us know, not everything, but say, oh, here's our plan. Here's release dates. Here's directors. Right. Here's actors.
Are they like a dog chasing cars, Justin?
Yeah.
It is. It's ridiculous because no one takes it serious, to be honest.
Right. My thing is instead of having things leak about, oh, we're planning or they're planning this, they're planning that, just tell me when things are ready to go and, are about to get, like Shazam, like happened with Shazam, right?
Yeah. We know it's coming out in April 2019. There you go.
It's April 5th now. They actually released the firm date. So, but what I mean is,
it's April. It got pushed back 2 weeks. So it's April 19th now. Mm-hmm. The rumor date before was April 5th, and now it's.
Well, either way, it's.
Either way, we know we have an idea.
Yeah, my whole point was, we weren't hearing any rumors or anything of the sort. We knew David Sandberg got hired. And then all of a sudden, okay, it's going to shoot February in Toronto and blah, blah, blah. And that's when we found out news. And that's how I like things to proceed. Instead of rumor after rumor and they're developing this, that, and the other, just tell me when things are ready to go, right? And I think I think you're bang on, Justin, about it being a budgetary issue because, he's Walter Hamada has produced it. He's been involved with the Conjuring franchises. So, and those are famous.
And it made money, man. I mean, it made a lot of money.
It and Wonder Woman, I think, offset any disappointment that Warner Brothers had from Justice League, right? So, box office wise. So I think and that's been my criticism too. They got to get, among other things, they got to get the budget for these things down. I mean, to me, like the fact that they've spent, I've said it before and I'll say it again, the fact that the last two, between Superman Returns, $209 million or whatever the heck it was, and then with Man of Steel 2 and 25, I don't see why in a world where Guardians of the Galaxy costs $140 million, you can't make a Superman movie for a reason that same amount or even just slightly less than that.
Yeah. Well, look at a movie like Deadpool. It had a budget of like a little under $60 million, right? And then at the end of its worldwide, I mean, it was up in the, I think it was like in the $700 million range, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's a success. Yeah. Let's say Justice League made $1 billion. It's still not as profitable as Deadpool because Deadpool's budget was so small. And a movie like Justice League needs a bigger budget, that thing, it was bloated and all these budgets are bloated. And it's, I don't think the payoff's there. I don't think the money's being put into the things that matter. I mean, you could, going into Suicide Squad 2, I'm excited for that because, I know Suicide Squad wasn't the best movie, but it was a fun movie.
Right. I agree.
A few problems that it had, and hopefully going into 2, they scale that scale down that freaking budget and make it streamlined, make the story small, because here's the thing. We care about the characters. Have good character interactions. Have good moments. And then, get buy-in from the people. And I think people do have buy-in on some of these characters. Obviously, I mean, Suicide Squad was more successful than Justice League. What's that tell you? That people had a connection to some of these characters and there was some buy-in. And hopefully on these sequels, and not just Suicide Squad 2, but all these movies have appropriate budgets, have good story, and I think the people will show up. People do pay attention to some of the news. It starts leaking, it's like a tire at the top of a wheel. It's going to start gaining momentum and people are going to start going, oh, I heard this wasn't good, right or wrong. Yeah. I don't mean to push the topic, but, like in a couple of weeks, Justice League is going to come out on, digital and video. Blu-ray and all that stuff. Yeah. I'm interested to see if it gains some legs that way. Maybe people will check it out now. Like, okay, I didn't want to go see it in the theaters because I heard it was bad. They watch it and you go, it wasn't terrible. It's still kind of, it's not the movie it should have been, but it's not a terrible movie. It's just a movie,
I think that could be the case because here's the thing. I just went to a handful of friends who are not as into this stuff as I am just to get their view on it. And 4 out of the 5 absolutely hated Batman versus Superman. And they said, I really like Justice League.
Yeah.
And then there was the one that I talked to that loved Batman versus Superman and didn't like Justice League. So it seems like, just going off of the people that I've talked to, it seems like Justice League, the people that actually saw it, it left a better taste in their mouth than BVS did. So, I think you may be onto something there.
Yeah. I think it'll hit the general audience better, like the casual viewer at home.
Right.
And they might go, oh, this was actually good. Whereas, like myself, it wasn't what I wanted it to be. It was an okay movie. I didn't love it. My kids loved it. And so there's a win right there. My kids. Exactly.
That's what you hope for. And I agree with you with Suicide Squad too. I'm very excited for that. The character interactions of the actual team was the best part of that movie. The Enchantress was not, but she's gone. Thank God.
But well, there's a good segue because we just got a new producer, Michael DeLuca.
Right. And so,
yeah.
And that one seems like it's nearing, I mean, it's not ready to go, but it's got Gavin O'Connor in the director's chair, and who I believe is writing it. It's got a producer, so that's likely to start filming. I think their hope is that they start in fourth quarter of 2018. So, so that one's ready to go or getting ready to go. So I'm looking forward to that one. So hopefully they can.
And yeah, me too.
Hey, Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, I'm down for it. She was great. But let's transition a little bit into television. What's your thought on a couple of things? DCCW, give us an idea of where your level of interest is for the four shows. I think it's five now if you count Black Lightning coming out. I know it hasn't come out yet.
It comes out I think next week, right?
And this coming week, and so give us an idea of which shows you prefer, even if you want to rank give us a ranking of the shows. And then what's your temperature on something like Krypton, and as well as the DC streaming service with something like Titans? What are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, okay. I guess as far as the DCW shows, I've kind of popped in and out this season. I think last year just kind of I think it wore me out. And not that there's too much, because I can watch a cool show every night. The Flash just missed, man. Season two of The Flash was great. I think season three was a miss. It didn't know where to, it just went all over the place. I think Flashpoint was a bomb. There was no payoff. You know what? Diggle has a son now. That's it. That's the big takeaway from Flashpoint. We changed everything. And
to me, it wasn't Flashpoint. It was
Yeah, it was like,
you call it Flashpoint, but it's a diet Flashpoint.
It was Flash punt. It was a punt. It didn't do anything that didn't shake anything up. I mean, it would have been a great opportunity for them to really, I mean, if they wanted to go all out, man, fix the Black Canary problems they've had, fix everything. They could have fixed everything, and that would have been like, you know, even folding Supergirl into the, you know, their world would have been better. I don't know.
That they were going to do that. Yeah. I had a theory that they were going to wind up.
I think everybody thought that, and it just didn't. So
yeah, why not use a universe altering crossover to do that?
And it would have been fun for them to. And I don't know. Like as fans, we talk about things that it sounds easy, but there's probably no way to make it happen. But it would have been cool to get some pops into the Smallville world. There you go, Jordan, giving you a little build up. Oh, you know,
I would have loved that.
Pops to the old Flash TV show. And they did it that one episode. Remember, they had a little bit of a glimmer of John Wesley's ship as Barry Allen.
And I love that scene. When I saw it, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. So that would have been kind of cool just to see little like hints of stuff like that. But Flashpoint, just, you know, that didn't do anything for me. So Flash kind of bummed me out last year. Arrow as well. I'm just over, you know, Elicity. And they keep bringing it back.
Thank God there's somebody else.
Yeah, I don't. Elicity's terrible. I mean,
Last season didn't have that much of it.
Thank God. But it comes back. It keeps coming back,
it's
and
like
I'm like,
it's like a bad rash.
Who's asking for this? It's a bad rash. She is just not a character that I enjoy. Now, I used to like her when she was just working at Star Labs, and she was a fun, quirky character. The more and more she's been brought into like Team Arrow. Mm-hmm. As you know, Ollie's love interest, it just doesn't make sense. And as a Green Arrow fan, I love the Black Canary Green Arrow dynamic. And when people say, well, it's a TV show, it's different, I'm like, yeah, but that's a core part of the character. That's like Batman not having Alfred, you know, like that's a key part of the team. And they, you know, how many, this is like their fourth attempt at making a Black Canary character on this show, and none of them have landed. And they almost got there with Laurel. I was about to give her, I was welcoming her.
Right.
You know,
and then they killed her off. And,
yeah, they killed her off.
They gave her this great arc over the first four seasons, and then once they finally got her to a place, like they only really gave her one season as Black Canary.
Push back on that. I don't even think they gave her a great arc. They made her this lawyer and this drinking problem and all this other stuff. And I'm like, completely the exact. They just gave her CW melodrama instead of making her a strong character.
I think the drinking problem thing really did a disservice or set the character back. And then when they pushed her into the Black Canary role, it was too quick.
Yeah, it was.
Much like everybody that picks up, you know, fighting and superheroing in Arrow other than Arrow. It's like, okay, we're here for two episodes. Then we go on a 3-week hiatus where you don't see the character. And then they come back and they're martial arts experts and they can wield weapons, which pisses me off because I've trained in karate for 24 years. And it's
there
not
you
that,
go.
It's not that easy, but hey, on TV it is. So,
I was going to say, like, it shortchanges so many of these cool characters. Right. And you get a random character like Wild Dog, who I'm actually a fan of. And I liked how he looked last season. Now he looks like a generic, you know, Star Wars, you know, soldier or something. But he had a cool look, but they didn't hit his character right. He used to be this really obsessive, compulsive, kind of a nutball, and his character on Arrow missed it. They shortchanged Mr. Terrific. Seems kind of like a buffoon, and he doesn't seem like this genius that he was in the JSA comics. And then you get this kind of whiny rag man. I mean, they're just not giving the characters the arcs and the backgrounds they deserve. And
I'm gonna fight you on that, Justin. I don't have the comic background with Wild Dog in particular that you do, but for me, he took a long time to take a liking to, but with the Spectre of the Gun episode last season, that's where I really took a liking to him, where they gave us his backstory, and then I really got invested in him, and then all the stuff with him and Pam, you know, they're dying.
I'll agree with, I like him on the show, but it's just missing that, oh man, they're missing an aspect of the character that was unique, and he's just a generic vigilante guy,
I think out of all of them, I think Wild Dog is the best of the new bunch, be that what it is. But I you're right on Mr. Terrific. He comes off as, you know, Felicity's sidekick, and I think I think they write him that way to further prop up Felicity, in my opinion.
And
I feel bad for the actor because he's a great, like, I think he could do great things with the part if they allowed him to go full, because I could see from the stuff they're giving him that he has it in him if they let him go full force with it, you know what I mean?
I don't know. I find him hilarious. Yeah. Mr. Terrific.
He's funny, but he's not. It's not. Mr. Terrific is not a comedian. This is the problem.
Well, I think they've gotten the gene. Like, he is a tech genius on the show. Like, they've gotten that aspect of the character.
To a degree, yeah. But I think it all funnels through. Let's make sure Felicity is the smartest person in the room at the end of the day. For me, that's why I can't stand. You know, I can't stand that character, and it's because there were seasons where it became the Felicity show, and everybody else was. You know, I think it was season. I can't remember what season it was when they started really pushing this Felicity crap. It became Felicity and her friends, and then that's where it went. I mean, I will say this season is, aside from reuniting Felicity, everything else aside from that, I'm digging this season. I just wish they wouldn't go back to that well, but it is what it is. Justin, what is your take on Legends? Because
That's my guilty pleasure. Okay. some people put that at the bottom of their list. I just think it's just wacky, bananas, fun DC Universe stuff. I don't know why. It reminds me of these old shows they used to play in syndication on the weekends growing up. They're just, you know, kind of in the theme of like Xena and Hercules and Cleopatra 2020 or whatever the heck there was a show. It just feels like this just all out action. Who cares? Like, we're just going to do stuff that makes no sense. And I like it. So on that side of things, I enjoy it. And the cast is great, too. I think the cast has a really good chemistry. So I like that.
It's just so much fun, and the beauty of it is it knows that it's off the wall crazy, and it embraces that. Instead of you know, like when The Flash did time travel, it gave you a headache because there was so much you know that you had to wrap your head around. Here it's like, okay, we know some things don't work and don't necessarily make sense, but just come along for the ride anyway.
They've really leaned into the zaniness of it this season, and I think that's why this season has been Legend's strongest season. And I will say, Justin, it is at the bottom of my list when it comes to the Arrowverse shows. But at the same time, like,
I actually would probably put it at the top of my list. Well,
yeah,
probably near the top, just out of. Maybe not in terms of consequential storytelling, but in terms of just pure enjoyment week to week, I think that that's where I would put it.
I'd say that my least favorite of these shows is Supergirl.
Just, oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about that one.
Yeah, Supergirl just, I think Melissa Benoist is great as Supergirl.
She is.
But the whole, everything else is, to me, it gets to that point where the Felicity problem, everybody has to be a superhero. Like, why is Jimmy Olsen the Guardian? Like, things like that. It's bring the Guardian in. Like, why does he have to be a superhero? Why does Felicity have to? It's nice when there are people who are non-heroes, because it gives the hero something to work against. And,
yeah, like Wynn is a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. In fact, that character is a better Jimmy Olsen than actual Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
And
Jimmy Olsen needs to be there's something endearing about Jimmy Olsen when he's kind of a golly gee character.
Yeah, right.
You know, for him to be cool and suave and all that stuff, that's not Jimmy Olsen. But
I'm okay with Supergirl's take on him though, because this is supposed to be a more mature, older Jimmy Olsen who's sort of I feel like the implication is that this Jimmy was like that earlier, and then he sort of, as he grew up, he became more of a hardened photojournalist.
I can see that, but I've never seen those seeds planted. I have never seen, like, oh man, I used to love Superman. He was, you know, my buddy, and you don't see that.
But my question is, I don't know if I can put myself in the frame of mind that Jordan can, where it's like, if I think back and try to imagine the story myself, that I can see, McCabe Brooks playing it that way. I can't. Like, you saw, to me, you saw when Clark came into the show in season two, the first two episodes. It was like, hey, bro, hey, buddy, how's it going? You know, like, it's like, let's go get a drink. It wasn't, if he would have reverted to maybe not golly gee whiz, because I can't see that coming out of McCabe Brooks' mouth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean golly gee whiz, literally, but no. Like kind of that awe.
Right.
And
yeah,
that.
If he had approached Clark in a bit more of a jovial, excited way than he did, I think it would have gone a long way. I do like the actor and the portrayal of Martian Manhunter, and I wish they give us more of him. I understand why they don't, because of the budget and all that stuff. But yeah. I do like him on the show.
And his father this season has been wonderful, played by Justice League and Justice League Unlimited's Martian Manhunter.
That's cool legacy casting. I do like that. For sure.
And of course, our Smallville legacy cast this season. You know, I had to.
Of course, I expect nothing less anymore. Nothing shocks me. You'll find a way to jam a Smallville reference in if it's the last thing you do. I totally understand that.
It's almost like a Rick Shue Star Wars. He'll bring Star Wars into it somehow.
Oh yeah.
That's a good comparison.
There you go.
Before we kind of segue away from the TV, what do you think of? Are you excited for Black Lightning and
yeah, I am actually.
It looks like, to me, and I get your thoughts on it based on the trailers and stuff, it looks like it's breaking away from the CW formula for the superhero
show. That's what I was going to say. I feel like it's going to be a show. I mean, you know it's going to tie in somehow. One day, you know, Arrow's going to show up.
And be like, hey. In the crossover.
I like that it's going to be different. I think it needs to be. And what CW needs to see, maybe we don't need the ham-fisted melodrama all the time.
Right.
Like, let's have actual drama, like real life drama. And when you mix in real life drama with the backdrop of superheroics, I think that's cool. I'm not saying it doesn't have to be fun. I'm just saying, like, cut the, hey, I'm breaking up, we're going to break up again, we're going to get together. Like, man, I don't need that. Like, I'll watch reruns of Dawson's Creek for that. You know, I don't need that in Black Lightning. And so I'm looking forward to Black Lightning more than the CW shows. Like, last time I watched, you know, these shows was during the crossover. Right. Like, I'm like, I have no desire to revisit this until I hear otherwise.
Yeah, right.
And so
I hear.
Black Lightning's on my list, you know. And then the other one I'm looking forward to is Titans. Like, that just
looks, the streaming service.
You know, Titans, I'm really hoping for something magical there, you know. And
so you enjoyed the sorry, Jordan, I'll let you get your question in, but you're liking the look of Robin. I mean, from that brief still that we
I thought it looked fantastic. Yeah, I'm I think the weakest part of it is the mask. I was like, I think the mask could have a little more to it, but that's just nitpicking now.
That
I think
could even be something to do with the photo manipulation, or who knows? I mean, who knows how to look on him in action when you actually see him moving around and stuff.
Hawk and Dove look great, too.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget.
Wait, what was that?
He said Smallville alum Alan Ritchson from Aquaman.
Ninja Turtle, Michelangelo, right?
Right, exactly. No, Raphael. It was Raphael.
Was he Raphael? Yeah.
Which I'm sure is gonna, just the mere mention of the reboot is gonna piss off a lot of the hardcore original '90s movies. I'm a fan. Look, I'm a fan of both. I enjoy the '90s Turtles movies, and I enjoyed the first one of the reboot. The second one was but the first one was all right. And there was a Batman reference, which made it even cooler. I'm so psyched for Titans. Now, one of the things I want to get your opinion on regarding Titans is, because of the Robin angle, do you think there will be mention of his time with Batman in flashbacks? And dare we even dream of seeing, at the very least, Bruce Wayne in one of those flashbacks?
Yeah, I feel like you can't have Robin without Batman, I don't expect a full-on Batman in this show, there could be kind of, remember when Supergirl first started, they had like a POV version of Superman, like his face kind of blurred out from behind over the shoulder stuff. You can get that. On the old Teen Titans, not Teen Titans Go, but Teen Titans, the original series, there's times where they alluded to Bruce Wayne. Like, I remember there was a scene where Robin said, "I do have a father," because Slade was trying to.
And then they play the music and saw the bats fluttering. Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe you get little nods like that. I'm excited to see how they play that out,
Did you guys see the casting call that people are speculating might be Bruce Wayne for Titans?
No. What was it?
Dave Story, male, mid-30s to 40s, Caucasian. The downfalls of others only make this man strong. Polished, unwavering. Think a young Jack Nicholson. Now, to me, that didn't sound.
I mean, it's hard. It's hard to say because you could extrapolate to Bruce Wayne, and I think the thing to me, and then I'll get Justin's take on it, that I find interesting is in that casting announcement, or the casting side, I should say. Sorry. They also referenced basically it had a different code name, obviously, but it implied that they were casting for a younger Dick Grayson for flashbacks. So
I don't know, man. it's weird because they have all these different rules all over the place. I mean, I think one of the it's like their problem and also their like special unique take is. They've acknowledged this all takes place in a multiverse, similar to the comics. And you have your DCW multiverse. You have your Gotham show, whatever that part is. You have.
You're not a fan of that show, I guess.
I last time I saw it was season 2, episode 1. Okay. And that was just because I never watched past episode 6 of season 1. I'm just like, it's not for me.
It's been a while.
I'm sure it's good for others. For me, it's just trash juice. But they're going to start running into the problem of like, man, we got characters like, Slade, he's integral to the Titans story. And are they going to be able to use him based on his connections to Arrow? And it's not the same Slade. And then the same thing, is he going to start popping up in these movies based on the end of Justice League? So
we just heard that Arrow can't even use him anymore right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Their rules are weird. Like you can have Flash, but you can't do this. I don't know, man.
It's a weird, thing to sift through. But my only probable explanation of why you might see a Bruce Wayne or even a Deathstroke down the line on the streaming service is the fact that as an audience, we do have to pay for it, right? So
yeah,
if they're gonna give us something we're seeing at the same simultaneously in the movies, it's gonna be something we have to pay for, and the streaming service. Does that, so maybe that's the wiggle room, is that if it's something you're paying for, then they'll give you some of the big boys, right?
And I think we're smart enough to figure out like, oh, okay, this is this world and this is that world. Like, obviously you know, the Grant Gustin Flash wouldn't make sense in the DC films. You know, it's just a different tone. And then that would mean, oh, so that means that version of Captain Cold is going to, you know what I'm saying? Like you can't cross those things over. And so it's smart to keep them separate if that's how you're going to go and do it. But
what bugs me is that the whole conceit behind them keeping things separate was to give them more freedom. But
yeah.
You're saying that one can't use a character that the other's using, then that completely defeats the purpose of
you're also exactly. handcuffing. Yeah, you're also handcuffing at the same time.
Yeah.
I was gonna bring that up because I remember them saying that. Like, yeah, every week you have these just different stories and different worlds, but it's not so much the case, it seems like. So
my thing is, I don't think audiences are that like. You're by doing that, you're kind of supposing that the audience are morons because they won't be able to figure it out. Aside from one instance where, I was in the theater for Batman Begins, the first time I ever watched it, and you know the scene where Joel Chill shoots his parents.
Yeah.
There were these two. They must have been 14-year-old girls. Oh my God! Is that the Joker?
Yeah.
Like, if my eyes could have rolled, I felt like The Undertaker. Like, my eyes were rolling back. And just like, oh, seriously, did she seriously just say that? Like, really? But aside from that one instance, I've never seen an audience get overly confused by,
Well, you know what? There's precedence to that because during that time, there was a lot of, like, reboot. You know, like, oh, this is a remake.
Yeah.
And I had people say the same thing to me. Oh, are they're remaking Batman, and are they going to do the one with Mr. Freeze? And so I'm like, no, like this is a whole different thing. Cause people think the mainstream audience, Joker killed Batman's parents. That's it was in that movie, So I think there's precedence for those mistakes, but I think the audience is way more savvy now. I think they get it.
And plus there's ways to market it that you can sort of, allude to the differences, right? So, I mean,
well, they thought Batman Begins was a prequel, is what it came off.
Yeah,
oh, it's a prequel to Batman 89.
And especially because the suit was, I mean, there were differences, but it was still, the black rubber. I mean, there wasn't enough of differentiation, in, at least look wise, to that aspect. Then you see the tumbler, and it's like, okay, this is a totally different ball of wax. But there are ways to get around, and we'll see what the streaming service offers in that respect. If we do see Bruce Wayne or not.
Before we moved on, I wanted to say to Justin, it sounded like you hadn't seen the Supergirl mid-season finale yet.
No.
I don't know if this is going to change things for you, but I thought it was phenomenal and one of the best episodes the show's ever done, to be honest. And coming from me, though, Supergirl has been my favorite show this season so far of the Arrowverse shows.
So coming from me, that's really not.
Jordan loves everything, though, dude.
I know. Believe me, it's a constant week to week. It's like really, but
everything's the best.
But I will do this. I will back you. I will echo the sentiment that that was the best episode of the season. I will echo that sentiment. So if that adds any more weight to his statement, I don't know, but there it is. But I know, Jordan, there were a couple of topics you wanted to bring up with Justin.
Yes.
So I'll let you do that, starting with something that Justin recently had the privilege and pleasure of doing. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with that one. I really wanted to hear all about your experience, Justin, at the Scooby-Doo and Batman the Brave and the Bold world premiere.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. I just talked about that today with Bill for the Batman on Film podcast. It was fun. I got to go to Hollywood and go to the premiere and talk to, some of the cast. I got to talk to Diedrich Bader and I got to talk to John DiMaggio, who is the voice of Aquaman. And so that was cool, man. It was a good time. And, hearing the cast and the people who worked on the film be excited about doing Batman, it wasn't a job for them. It was a love, it wasn't like, oh man, yeah, we have to do this thing. Cause
unlike
I imagine
somebody else we know.
Ben Affleck. Right. Yeah, they generally felt very excited to be a part of the project. And Diedrich Bader, for sure, he was just like, I love playing Batman. Like, it's his favorite role to play. And it wasn't like lip service. It definitely was this is a fun job. And then I got to talk with Kate Micucci, who does Velma's voice. she was excited. You know, she's like, oh, I really relate and this is fun. And, you know, I think people who do voiceovers, I know, I mean, they do other things. They're probably in TV shows and things of that sort. But people who do the voiceovers tend to have a connection to the character. I think, you know, they perform it, you know, how many do they do? I mean, they do hundreds of these episodes over, you know, the seasons. And I think they do make a good connection and it becomes a part of their life. And they're appreciative of the impact it makes. You know, one of the things that me and Diedrich Bader talked about was my good friend, Diedrich Bader, we talked about was just, you know, the connection between, you know, the kids love it. And I told him he's in a different era now where he's going to be a lot of kids' first Batman, whereas mine was Adam West because just that was the reruns when I was a kid, you know. You know, and some people may go, oh, my first Batman was Michael Keaton. Well, you know, now Diedrich Bader is the first Batman for a lot of kids, my kids including. And so he was really touched by that. And it means something, like, you know, forever he will be associated with, you know, a certain age demographic. Like, oh, that was the first Batman I had was Batman Brave and the Bold. No. You know, my kid calls him Blue Batman. He was Blue Batman.
Yeah, because of the costume. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Jordan, did you watch? I haven't seen the movie yet. Jordan, did you
watch? I've seen it. I saw it first thing in the morning on Tuesday when it came out on digital.
It's fun. It's definitely a different. I think we're Batman Brave and the Bold. It's a fun show, and anyone can watch it, and kids can watch it. But I think this one's skewed a little younger just because of the Scooby-Doo aspect. Sure. And it's good though. It's a fun time if you're a fan of Scooby-Doo and Batman. Like, it's a win-win. The old ones from the 70s, those are fun in a nostalgic way, but it's not really it wasn't a good episode. It was kind of ham-fisted. This one's really fun. I mean, I think it honors both legacies and,
And I'm a fan of both characters, so I'm looking forward to actually seeing it.
There's a really good Easter egg at the end.
Is there an end tag? Do I have to wait till?
No, nothing. Okay. Nothing like that. Okay. Like, there's a part at the end of the movie that I was like, oh, that was pretty smart. I like that. So, but I don't want to give it away.
And the cool thing is too, for me, I came to Batman Brave and the Bold later because at first I was like, this is not for me. And then my friends kept insisting, no, they're like, look. It's a sort of love letter to the vintage, or as they call it, like the older DC stuff. You know, he goes, as a DC fan in general, you gotta give it a go. So I give it a try, and then I relented. I love it. I mean, it's not my favorite Batman animated series. That would be Batman the Animated Series. But I really ended up liking it. And like I was telling Jordan, earlier we talked about the Teen Titans Go movie trailer. Teen Titans Go is not for me. It's not my cup of tea. But one of the things I said was, at the end of the day, I'm glad that it exists for the younger generation, so that at least there are more fans of DC being cultivated and being exposed to this stuff. And that's always a good thing. So even if it's...
Oh, man. Teen Titans Go is probably my favorite DC TV show on right now.
Fair enough.
I'll just make that statement. It's just fun, man.
Fair enough. But my conceit is that at least, like, I'm glad that it's there for the audience that loves it, and for the kids especially.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, growing the DC fan base into the future, I think, is important. And everybody should have something. Is my mantra. So.
I think I'm higher on Teen Titans Go than you are, Adam, but I think that you're a lot higher on Brave and the Bold than I am.
We're bizarros of each other, I guess, right?
I know. You know what I love about Teen Titans Go is just the background jokes. They just make me laugh. They make me laugh. So it's not even connected to the show. It's just like, little kids aren't going to get it, but I'm gonna laugh at the posters in the background.
Did you see one of the most recent episodes, Justin, where they went to Wayne Manor and all the Easter eggs they had there?
I haven't seen the most recent ones. I watch a lot of reruns because my kid will watch the same episodes over and over. I never know, like, the run order. I'm just like, oh, I've seen that one where they, you know, hang out with the Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus, the evil one.
Okay, well, when you get to this one eventually, Justin, I can't remember what was the most recent one. They've been on hiatus for a little bit, I think. But it was the it was one of the most recent episodes where they went to Wayne Manor, and there's Easter eggs for like a bunch of Batman films in that one. It's brilliant. Like you see the table, and you see a lot of other stuff in there. I think you see some old villain costumes from the films. I'm trying to remember. Cool. It's been a while since I saw the episode. Yeah, it was a couple months now, I think, but it was great.
I'll throw it on today. I'll check out the most recent.
I do appreciate the references. In the episodes that I've casually caught because of my nephews, where I said most of the time, like I said to Jordan, it's on, but I'm not really, it's on more to entertain my nephews than it is me. But the odd reference or in joke that I'll find and I'll laugh at or I'll get a kick out of. But like I said, at the very least, I'm glad it exists to create future generations of Batman fans and DC fans, and that's at the end of the day, that's a good thing, whether it's for me or not. And then Jordan, you wanted to touch on Batman comics with Justin because
I listened to Justin's, I think it was the BOF comic book show for the end of 2017.
Yes.
And I also talk to him all the time on the Real Fans group, and he's behind me on Tom King's Batman run. I mean, I've said it on this show that it's my favorite comic book run of all time. I love it, and obviously as a huge Batcat shipper, the whole run's been pretty much a dream come true for me. And so I really wanted to make sure that we touched on that because I wanted to gush about this run with Justin. So I guess that was the other thing I wanted to bring up with you, man.
Yeah, bring it up, dude.
Where are you? Love it. Where are you currently in the run? Like, what issue are you?
Justin,
because you said he was behind. So I just want to get a gauge.
No, I'm not. I think he meant I'm behind him. Like I back him.
Oh, okay. I thought you said he was.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. No, I'm.
My mistake.
I just read actually this week's this week's issue. So I already have this week's Wonder Woman issue.
So you're good then. You're
yeah. Yeah.
I often joke with Jordan about the Batcat referral. Like that's the only thing that really bothers me is that they refer to it in the Twitter vernacular where everything has to be a hashtag or something of that nature. But I do to me that relationship is if Batman's gonna end up with anybody. It would be Catwoman. So I'm glad they're taking that step.
It really feels like they're actually taking the next natural step in that relationship. They kind of danced around it in Hush. Like Hush, they kind of brought it up.
Yeah.
And then if you ever read, I think the superior version, The Heart of Hush by Paul Dini.
Fantastic. It's great.
Yeah.
That scene at the end of Heart of Hush, man.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, where Bruce thinks that she's asleep and he's talking to her and he's pouring his heart out and then she tells him she's awake.
Yeah.
And that it's funny because in the most recent issue of Batman number 38, I sent out a tweet about this that you know when Bruce was talking to Selina and as she was sleeping and he was talking like he was trying to recount like all the things about the case that he was working on.
Yeah.
I tweeted out, I was like, I have a theory that Selina was actually awake in that scene and she was just pretending she was asleep like in Heart of Hush.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think what Tom King is doing is, in my opinion, is surpassing what Scott Snyder has done. Like Snyder stuff is good, but I will tell you the end of the Snyder run became kind of like all over the place. I wasn't a fan of Zero Year, by the way. I just didn't care for it. Super Heavy.
Was that the robot? Was that the bunny ears Batman?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hated that. Oh.
Yeah. So it kind of lost me. Once you got into the mid-30s of that run, it just didn't do anything for me. And I'm going to tell you, this run has just been A+. And even the stuff I'm like, what? Because I think the latest issue, the origin of Bruce Wayne, at first it kind of – I didn't know where I sat with it. And then reading it again, and I was like, okay, this is going to come back. And I actually like what he did there. The only issues I don't like was the Monster Men ones, which he wasn't even on those. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think those really count. But I'll agree. That's been the weakest. But everything else has been I don't think that there's a single issue that I've given that I'd give less than an A. Like everything. Yeah. And I was loving it even before he introduced Catwoman. I was like, I loved I Am Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
It took me like one or two issues to get into it. And then after that, it was just off. I thought it was phenomenal.
Oh, dude, that first issue where Batman takes down a plane.
Yeah, and he's talking to Alfred about on the intercom about dying, right? And he's and just all that stuff. And what I personally like about Tom King's run is that he can balance the, you know, the crazy quote unquote superhero stuff that we expect in these stories with the personal, introspective, character driven stuff. I think
balances. He finds, and it's a really tight line to walk, but he walks this line of writing Batman as vulnerable while also still always being powerful. So he captures both aspects of it, and that's
He does a good job of bringing some of that fun to it. Yeah, and without making Batman again a buffoon, but he almost pokes fun at some of the silliness.
I mean, look at Batman 37. The bat stands for a bat.
Right.
That 2 issues with Superman was fantastic.
That was
so good.
It reminded me, first of all, it shows that, you really get the sense of the respect and the friendship they have, even though the two of them are like, you know, hard-headed to admit anything or to acquiesce to the other. It won't do it, but there is such a friendship and respect there that you truly get. But it harkened back to me a little bit to, at least in the tone of it, the Jeff Loeb Batman Superman title.
I can give you on that.
From about 14, 15 years ago, whatever it is now. It reminded me a lot of that. Those 2 issues, I was smiling and I'm like, okay, this guy, I hope he never with Tom King. I hope he never leaves the character.
it's funny you say that, because before Tom King came around, Jeff Loeb was my favorite Batman, and so he's still number.
Yeah, I love Jeff Loeb too. I mean, his stuff is great.
But I just think, man, Tom King is making magic. Yeah, this is and what after reading those 2 issues, it really was. To me, what was pressed upon me was like, man, the Batman Superman relationship is really good when you explore it, and when you have a good understanding of who their characters are.
Yeah.
And that's really what I wish those movies were. Man, like, such missed opportunities explore that friendship, and we never got it.
Even me, who you know, I liked Superman Batman or Batman vs Superman, you know.
I like the movie too.
I acknowledge there's problems. Don't get me wrong. I understand that.
Yeah.
But even me, somebody who likes it and defends it, can say, man, I wish we got something like this where they were partners for the whole thing. Or like a reference on Twitter yesterday, you know, Jeff Loeb's Batman and Superman, the Public Enemies run. Why couldn't we have something like that? Like, now we've been robbed. To me, we've been robbed of that.
Yeah, we really have. Because we're probably not going to see it for a long time.
No. What am I, 30 something, 34 now? I'll probably, maybe when I'm in my 50s or 60s, I'll see that.
Yeah, right.
Getting back to Tom King's run, for me, so I Am Gotham, I was already on board with. And then we heard that he was going to bring in Selina. And so I was already loving the run. And it's like, for me, Selina's my second favorite fictional character of all time, right behind Batman himself. Huh. So. For me, it was like, oh my goodness, could this get any better? He starts out, I'm so eagerly anticipating it. He brings her in, I Am Suicide, and I liked it. But what really, where I was like, okay, Tom King is gonna do something special with this relationship, was those love letters they wrote back and forth to each other in I Am Suicide.
Yeah.
And that final line that always stands out to me, when it says, and then maybe the kiss will finally last. And then I was like, huh, I wonder, I hope that Tom King makes that. Like, I was really like, well, maybe it will. Maybe Tom King will do that. And then it just kept going. And we got Rooftops, which at the beginning of 2017, I hailed my favorite comic of all time. That was beautiful. And then I was like, I didn't think anything was ever going to top that in my lifetime, let alone this year. Then let's jump forward to Batman Annual number 2 towards the end.
Yep.
Because we got to talk about that. That is the single greatest comic book that has ever been written.
Oh, it was so good.
Like, yeah. I was.
Go ahead, Jordan. What are
you saying? I was bawling my eyes out by the end of that issue. This is exactly how I'd want the story of my two favorite fictional characters of all time to end. Like, that is how I want it to go out. Like, yes, I was sad at the end. and I guess I should say spoilers. I can't remember if we said this already. Sorry, anybody. Spoilers. The way that that issue goes and it chronicles that it's a love letter. To the last, all the way through. You start with her and Wayne Manor, and you see that Bruce, even though he's acting to Alfred like he's annoyed, but you can see that he's into it and he loves it, and he's through Wayne Manor, and he gets excited every time she shows up there, and see their first kiss, and then you see them, you jump forward to when they're old and they've grown old together. I love that they got the chance to do that, and you see it, and Bruce goes out, and you see that final page when he leaves the cat in the Batmobile for her, and he leaves the note. Yeah. And I was like audibly sobbing during that.
Yeah, scene. Me too. Like I don't admit to very often to crying during a comic book. I mean, I wasn't sobbing to Jordan's levels, but tears were falling. Just to me, it's the perfect ending for. I mean, it's sad, but it's the perfect ending for these two. And you know what? You know what put it over the edge for me was seeing Helena Wayne again, the daughter of Batman and Catwoman. I can't stand, all due respect to the fans of this character, the Helena Bertinelli version it's not my cup of tea. I'm old school, Helena Wayne, Helena Kyle, however you want to phrase it.
What did you think of her being Batwoman though instead of Huntress?
Well, in the future I'm fine with it. Like if they, but my thing is, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Justin, is do you think this is just going to remain a what if, or do you think DC will take steps to bring, or like with the marriage of Batman and Catwoman, hopefully it happens. I hope they don't pull the rug out from under us, but.
We better get a wedding issue this year.
Justin's going to sign a petition.
And petitions work, man. They work.
Yeah, they'll release the Snyder Cut.
Just kidding.
But do you think the marriage, and then, obviously if it leads to a kid, do you think DC will actually start taking steps to reinstate the Helena Wayne character? Or is this just going to be a nice one-off what-if scenario?
Oh, it's comics, man. So I think that there's always a possibility to see this world again. But, I mean, as far as getting married and getting to that point, I mean, it's going to be,
it's comics. There would be a time.
Everyone's parentally like 35 years old or whatever. No one really ages except Robin. Robin grows up.
Yeah. So, there would be a jump forward, but I'd like to see the character again.
Who knows? I mean, with how they're doing everything with Rebirth, I mean, she was there in the New 52.
That's true. Her
Empowered Girl. You remember she was Robin and.
Yes, yeah, so I love that, and I love that series actually. That was
So who knows, man? I don't know. Like, there's already the Helena Bertinelli character Huntress is around again, and she's been kind of in the Birds of Prey stuff. So, I'm not opposed to her showing up. I mean, I would love to revisit this, post Bruce Wayne dying world somewhere.
Yeah.
Sure. Not a Batman Beyond future, but like, hey, what's going on with the Bat family?
Sure.
Batman Annual number 3. Who knows what we'll see.
And before, what's that?
Tom King's been very coy about whether the annual is actually canon or not. But even if it's not, it's my headcanon for how Batman's story ends and how Catwoman's story ends. Because
more deserved and earned as opposed to, other.
Get me started, Justin.
All I'll say is this: my favorite part, there was no John Blake at the end.
There you go.
It's funny you say that, Justin, because this annual gave me the same feeling that The Dark Knight Rises gave me 5 years ago, walking out of the theater. Huh. So, for me, it did a similar thing in comics to what that movie did for me, and that's my favorite film of all time.
But it was just earned. It was way such a way more earned relationship in this comics, where the movie it was just like, oh, you guys just met and now she's your dream girl. I mean, I didn't buy the relationship at all.
It was a one-off.
Like, okay, well, come with me. I'm like, dude, you can't trust that girl. But
this is a whole another conversation. But
we'll agree to disagree. At least you. I agree with him, so we'll agree to disagree.
There we go.
But just a quick thought on before we wrap things up. Are you reading Detective at all, Justin?
I'm in and out on that one. My problem with the book is I think there's just too many characters in it.
So
when I read it, I'm not reading it as a Batman book to like, oh, I'm going to get Batman's adventures. I do like, I think I was bummed that Tim took off so quick. They took him out of the equation so quick. And so
you haven't read, have you read, what is it? Lonely Place of Living?
No, I have not. I think I'm going to get the trade on that. I want to sit down and read it.
That's very good because obviously, spoiler, I'm sure you know by now, they bring.
Yeah, no, I know he's. Yeah. I know he's back. Because I did just read the Super Sons of the Future arc.
I like that arc, by the way. I don't know your feelings on that, but I dig it.
I just read the finale yesterday, and I like the finale better than. I think it kind of slowed down in the middle, but overall, I think it was a fun time. It's always fun to I love alternate versions of characters. It's kind of fun to see them, you know, interact with kind of the, you know, the core version of who that character is. And so
and I also love the Connor Kent version of Superboy personally.
Yeah, so, man, I miss that character.
Yeah, me too.
It's hard. I've talked about that with Matt on the Let's Go Comic Show, and our favorite version of Superboy has been Connor Kent, but Jonathan Kent's good too.
Yeah, like, no disrespect to John, exactly.
Yeah, but they're both good versions, and you know, I would like to see them coexist somehow.
Since you segued into that, just before we wrap, going back to Titans, the show, do you think we ever get Connell and that story play out on a future season of the Titans? Like, if you were running the show, would you pull that trigger and make that happen?
Oh yeah, for sure. I think it's a really intriguing take on the superhero character, the, you know, a clone of Superman and Lex Luthor. Like, I think they did a good job on Young Justice.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Young Justice was a prevalent story in Young Justice, so
great job with it too.
Yeah, if here's what I would recommend to people, everyone who's listening to the show and stuff, is check out the Adventure Comics run by Geoff Johns and Francis Manapul. They did a fantastic version of Superboy, and it was the Connor Kent story, and I think it was right before like Blackest Night, around that time. So I think it was 2008 or it was a really good story. And I think he had some interactions with Red Robin as well. Which, that was another fantastic book. So
if we see Connor Kent in I still have a theory that Titans is going to wind up being incorporated in the Arrowverse.
No way.
Not at all.
No, I doubt it. You're wrong.
No, I don't think so.
Well, where I was going with it, though, if I am right, which clearly you guys disagree, but if I am right, I think we see Superboy, because we've already gotten Cadmus on Supergirl. I think Superboy gets introduced on Supergirl and then winds going over to Titan.
I hope they don't waste him on Supergirl.
Yeah, I don't think that Titan show is going to connect to the Arrowverse. I don't think so.
I think it would be smart not to. I mean,
yeah, there's already too many.
Then you're asking for another headache. It's just
Because then it's like, oh, you know, you can't use Robin now because for whatever reason.
Right. Yeah.
So no, but I think it's best to close the door.
The main reason I think we're gonna get Superboy on that show eventually is because, you know, they have their Batman character with Robin,
and then
maybe possibly Nightwing, depending if he transitions or not. And then there's talk of a casting side that infers Donna Troy, so they'd have their Wonder Woman stand-in. So it's only natural that they'd have their Superman representative as well.
Before we wrapped, I wanted to talk about Krypton.
Oh yeah, are you excited for that? Are you?
Yeah, I actually am. Before I wasn't. At first I was kind of cold on it. I was like, oh, who cares? But this latest trailer and knowing that, oh man, like, they're gonna have a Green Lantern on the show and Adam Strange and all that stuff. I'm like, this could be a really fun show, and so I'm at least more excited than I was.
And what I was saying to Jordan is that the production values look incredible.
Oh yeah, it looks great.
And you know what got me? And I know it's a stupid thing. I was saying this to Jordan earlier. When Adam Strange hands Segel the cape, something so simple like that, and it has an S on it, and I'm like, all right, I'm in. You sold me. Hook, line, and sinker, I'm in.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much. I'm very easy. But not as easy as Jordan, because he likes Catwoman, the movie.
Wait, are you kidding me?
No, I'm dead serious.
Jordan.
No, he's not kidding at all.
Jordan. Why? Okay, Jordan, here's your homework. Just get a little bit of discernment. Not everything is great. Like, you have to, I like that you find the good in everything, but
yeah,
Catwoman.
I love Catwoman.
Hey, just wait till you hear our Batman Forever review.
Batman Forever. I like Batman Forever.
Yeah, I do too. I give it it's my guilty pleasure.
Catwoman. I don't even think the people that made Catwoman like Catwoman.
Here's what I'll say. This is what I've been saying to everybody who says that to me. That was the first DC movie I ever saw in theaters. If that helps explain my appreciation for it.
My reaction to that is, if that was the first DC anything I saw, I would be Team Marvel 100%.
That's like saying that first food. I mean, do you still eat baby food and enjoy it? Like, you gotta grow up, man. You gotta expand your tastes. It's okay. It's okay to go to a point and go, you know what?
Jordan.
That wasn't good.
Have a steak. It's time to put down the. It's time to put down the Gerber baby food. But is there anything else you wanted to touch on with Justin, Jordan, while we have him?
Well, I know you wanted to. I know you said you wanted to talk Batman Returns.
Was joking, but I'm always down.
Here's what we'll do. Because Rick and Bill absolutely detest that film. just let's talk about it for a few minutes. Tell us why you love that film.
I don't know what it is, to be honest. I think it's just a moment. It's almost to Jordan's like Catwoman thing. Yeah. It's just a moment in time that I really enjoyed, and I do have issue with. Actually, I don't particularly enjoy, you know, the character setups of Catwoman and Penguin. Like, you know, it's not my take. It's not the way I would go. But sure, there's something iconic about the performance, and I love the set design and the art direction of that movie more than anything. I think the score is the best. It feels claustrophobic and cold, but I like it. And, you know, I know that it's shot on a set, but there's something about it that I like, and it gives me a feeling, and it's as simple as that. And it's a weird Batman movie, and there's a little bit of a goth kid in me, and I think maybe that's
You know what it is too. I think to me that's because people get crazy about, well, Batman Kills, especially, you know, it's more overt than those
first. Man, you know what? I don't know. We just did a commentary on that, and the setting the guy on fire, I don't know if he dies. I think he jumps into the snow and
burns, sure, but not
sure. Dying. Yeah. Now let's talk about the big one is the strong man.
Yeah.
Right. When he explodes down in the sewer, I feel like it's like a confetti concussion bomb or something. Yeah. And I'm trying to make allowances. I'm probably wrong. He killed that guy straight up. And even if he didn't, he murdered all of the Joker's henchmen in '89. Exactly. So,
my biggest problem with him killing the guy with the bomb, or perhaps killing the guy with the bomb, that it's not that he does it so much that he smiles at me. That's where it took it one step too far for me.
He was like, "I got you."
What's that?
I think he just knew. He was just like, you can't get me with your little fun bomb. See, I'll put your confused bomb right down your pants.
Here's how I excuse it. I look at Tim Burton's Batman as the Batman of, you know, the first few appearances of Batman where he wielded a gun and he wasn't afraid to go the extra mile. It was only later on, when you think about it, a little bit later on, that he adopted really the no killing mantra. So I look at it different from that lens. But then again, in every incarnation, he's either, except for I think Batman and Robin, which let's not bring that up, he's either in some way, shape, or form been party to a villain or a henchman dying. So it's not like this is the first time, you know, it's not like Batman Returns was the first time it was done. It's not like Batman Returns, you know, will be the last. I mean, BVS stuff happened. And Batman Begins on the train with Ra's. So it's not like this is never, it's never been done before. And I just don't understand how. Sure, would I like to see a movie where Batman is not implicit at all in the killing of any of his villains or their henchmen? Sure, I'd be down for it. But if it happens that way, that's not gonna make or break a movie for me. And
yeah.
I've sort of accepted that it's sort of the status quo. But Roz on the train, I don't think counts, though.
Oh, I hate that part.
Well, hold on a second. He says, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you.
Right. Yeah, he didn't kill him. He just didn't save him.
It would have been stronger if he tried. It would have been a way stronger moment. Because it would have been a good callback. It would have been a good callback to the beginning of the movie where he does save him.
Yeah.
And if it was almost, you know, a kind of the same beat where he reaches out to grab his arm, and Roz pulls away. Yeah. That would have been so much more powerful because then it would have been it would have been a choice on Roz to die or, you know, whatever, regenerate or, you know, they never really touch upon it, but it would have made Batman's code even stronger. Cause for him to be, I think that's just as flippant as grinning about, you know, putting a bomb in the guy's pants, you know, it's the same thing. It's like I threw a bomb in your pants to them. This is worse because he's going, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. It's like, what you are.
He's basically you are saying killing. I could. Yeah. Cause he's basically saying in a roundabout way, I could save you, but I'm
yeah. That's it.
I think there's a line there. I think he actively took part in killing the guy in Batman Returns. And whereas with Roz, Roz was going to die anyway, and Bruce had the option to save him and chose not to.
No, Roz, yes, you're right. Roz could have died, and Batman, being the person who's stepping into the role of a hero, had every ability to save him, and he basically said, I'm not going to. That's like you being outside and somebody can get hit by a bus, and you say, well, I could have saved you, but I just watched.
Right, like, but is that person a murderous criminal who just tried to destroy the city?
Well, that's the thing with Batman. He saves the Joker. He believes everybody can be rehabilitated, and that's the beauty of him. He's probably causing more problems. Dude, kill Joker, knock him off a building, kill every one of these bad guys, and your problems go away.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But that's not who Batman is.
He's prolonging his war on crime by letting them.
Very true, right? Yeah, Batman should have tried to save Ra's, and sorry, I say Ra's because that's what it is.
That's fine.
And then Ra's could have pulled his hand back. I think that would have been a more powerful ending to that story.
I'm gonna defer and agree with Justin on this one, but I will say just before we close. The reason why I love Batman Returns is it's the last one we have with Michael Keaton, who is the Batman I grew up with. And also, Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman gave a hell of a performance, first of all.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was that age, she was my celebrity crush, if you will.
The Bat-Cat relationship, as it was portrayed in that movie, was phenomenal, and for me that's the highlight.
She was the first time I started to accept the fact that no, girls don't have cooties, and it's you want to hang around with them. It's a good thing.
The masquerade ball scene in that movie, one of the best Batman scenes that's ever been committed to film.
Yep, you're right. Yeah. I love that scene.
Yeah, see, occasionally he's right, and then you know, and one time out of ten that he's right.
Oh man, I like the fun with Jordan because Jordan does, you're so exuberant about everything you love, and I think that's good because there's a lot of us that are crummy and old. And you know, our opinions make us, you know, they give us a little bit of, you know, shade, and we're a little bit jaded. There you go, we're jaded through life, you know. For every you know, Dark Knight and Batman Begins, you know, we get a Batman and Robin, and that soils us.
why are we still going back to this?
Yeah, you know, like
why can't we learn from our mistakes?
Yeah, and every movie has a flaw. Like no movie is perfect because everyone has an opinion, and you know, even in the bright spots, you can find something like, oh yeah, that bugged me. Like Batman Begins, I love that movie, but. you know, we can break down like, oh, but I didn't like this. And, you know, overall, we're all critics.
Yeah,
we're fans first, you know.
I've yet to see a perfect movie, and I don't think I probably ever will. But
I got the one for you.
Oh, which one is it?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Perfect movie.
I really like that movie. I haven't sat down and picked it apart, so I tried to. Maybe I will now.
I think you're mistaken, Justin. It's called The Dark Knight Rises.
No, we're not going there, please.
Sorry, I didn't hear anything. I just heard. There's certain words my computer blocks out.
The static was coming back.
Yeah.
Justin, thanks for coming on. We had so much fun with you. Finally able to get this done and get you.
Yeah, it was fun, dude.
It was good. Is there anything social media wise, or first of all, any other thing besides Batman on Film? Or, I mean, plug Batman on Film because we're part of the Batman Podcast Network.
That's right.
But anything you want to plug? Specifically?
Yeah. Again, Batman on Film, authoritative, definitive, the original Batman on Film.
You won't say Dadgum because
original, right?
I just feel like I can't say Dadgum because I'm not from Texas, and every time I say
it's,
it, I feel
sacrilege
like
sacrilege if you're not from there.
I'm from California. I almost feel like it has to have dude at the end or like.
Yeah.
So check out batmanonfilm.com, and we just launched a new website and really excited about that. And we have a bunch of fun stuff coming this year. And if I could plug my own podcast, the Let's Go podcast, where we have I do a Let's Go podcast, which is kind of pop culture, and then a Let's Go comic show, which is just comics focused. And we just launched another show called Start Today, which is part of the Let's Go podcast network. And it's my buddy Mike and Eric talking about just the topics of the day. And so you can check all those out at letsgocast.com.
And if people want to find you on social media, where can they do that?
Oh, you can find me at J_Rocca on Twitter. And that's where I'm at.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you talk Batman with him, talk, you know, whatever.
I'll talk whatever, man. Just ring it up.
Awesome Batman Returns is. And then post lots of gifts so that it'll upset Rick Shu and you can watch that banter unfold.
It's all in fun.
We had him on for Batman 89. It was a great, great experience. He's a good guy. And Jordan, if people want to talk to you about Smallville,
Catwoman, and Smallville.
Absolutely. I'm happy to talk about those things anytime. So you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV. As Adam mentioned, we are a member of the Batman Podcast Network. You can go to Batman Podcast Network to find all the other BatmanPodcastNetwork.com, I should say, to find all the other Batastic Batman-related podcasts on there, including the host podcast, of course, the Batman on Film podcast that Justin's a part of. And yeah, your Let's Go show is on there, right, too, Justin?
Yeah, it is by proxy. Bill's all throw it on there.
Yeah.
Cool.
But the comic show should probably be the one that's on there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. And I was just going to say, and also I want to solicit more iTunes reviews. So if you like what you're hearing, we'd love to hear from you on with the iTunes review. That would help us out a lot. Thank you.
And if you want to talk to me and try and figure out why Jordan likes Catwoman, we can spend hours trying to debate that and trying to get to the root of the problem. And you can find me to do that at Superhero Sci-Fi. That's the end of our show. Thanks for listening. And until next time, have a great weekend and a great week. So long, everybody.
Bye.